Out of all the days in the 1900s, which day was the most significant in world history? Nathan, I don't want you answering. Let everybody else have an opportunity here. Terry, what's your answer? But yes, the assassination of the Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand. Every single war in the world today, except for the war in Colombia, South America, but every other war in the world today can be traced back directly to the assassination of the Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand. Anybody like to tell me why? What was the date? Anybody know? June 28th, 1914. It is what triggered off World War I. He was assassinated in the city of Sarajevo. In fact, when there was fighting in Sarajevo a few years ago, during all the wars in the Balkans in the 1990s, I think it was the Times in England made the comment, the 20th century began in Sarajevo and it's ending in Sarajevo. In other words, we haven't come very far in 100 years. But that was the single event that was the most important event of the 20th century. And it led to all the chaos and confusion that we've got. To use a scripture here in the book of Judges, if you look at the last verse of the book of Judges, the situation that applied in ancient Israel at this time has really described our world since the assassination of the Austrian Archduke. Judges 21:25 says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." To put it another way, the writer of one book about this period of time titled his book, "The End of Order." Before 1914, you had order in the world. Now, it wasn't perfect, of course. I think we all understand that. We've never had a perfect era in the history of the world. You know, mankind is imperfect. But there have been periods where there's been greater stability than what we've got now. In fact, this probably is the most unstable period the world has experienced for a long period of time. The world, as I said, before 1914, was divided into five major empires. The British Empire, the French Empire, German, Austrian, and Russian. They dominated the world. And they had done for hundreds of years. And so, you know, you had, in 1914, the Pax Britannica, the British peace, had been imposed on the world for about 100 years, and the world had had relative peace, during no major conflict during that period of time. A few conflicts, regional conflicts, took place, but there was peace. And also, you know, the way these empires were structured, everybody knew their place. You had the king or the emperor at the top. In France, you did have a republic, you had a president. But France actually was the weakest one of those five in terms of its governmental system because France, remember, has been historically very unstable. These other countries were much more stable. The Habsburgs, who ruled Austria-Hungary, had ruled that area for 600 years. And before that, they were the Dukes of Burgundy, and they went back over 1,000 years. And the actual Emperor of Austria at the beginning of 1914, Franz Joseph, had been emperor since 1848. So he'd been emperor for 66 years when World War I started, and he died 2 years later, having reigned for 68 years. But all of these empires, the Austrian, the German, and the Russian, collapsed in World War I. You know, since then, we've had never-ending conflicts as a result of the collapse of these empires. When the Ottoman Empire collapsed, you got the new Middle East, and you got all these complications in the Middle East. So it's just been a never-ending ripple effect, which just carries on. Josh.
You asked me to ask you a question about if Joseph would stay together.
Yes, that's a very good question. That was another question. We're looking here, just clearing up a few things here. Look at the book of Hosea. This is a good question. The question is, will Joseph stay together at the end time? Here is a prophecy that has never been fulfilled. Remember that the ancient kingdom of Israel fell over 100 years before Judah fell. Okay? Israel was taken into captivity by Assyria over a century before Judah was taken into captivity by Babylon. Here we see in Hosea chapter 5 a prophecy of impending judgment on Israel and Judah. In verse 5, the pride of Israel testifies to his face. Therefore Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity. Ephraim is part of Israel. Judah also stumbles with them. So Israel, Ephraim, and Judah are mentioned here. With their flocks and herds they shall go to seek the Lord, but they will not find him. He has withdrawn himself from them. They have dealt treacherously with the Lord, for they have begotten pagan children. Now a new moon shall devour them and their heritage. Now this is speculation, but a new moon is 30 days. That's a period of time, 30 days. And it says here that a new moon shall devour them and their heritage. So what is being said here is that Israel, Ephraim, and Judah will fall within a 30-day period. That's never happened historically. Ancient Israel and ancient Judah fell, but the falling was over 100 years apart. So that wasn't fulfilled in ancient times, and it looks as if it will be fulfilled in the future. And this would suggest, therefore, that at the very end, Joseph and Judah are together. Why would it say Israel and Ephraim? Well, remember, the major nation of Israel today is the United States. So, you know, remember Jacob said as well to Joseph's sons, "Let my name be named on them." So Joseph is Israel today. But Ephraim is listed separately here. It's mentioned separately from Israel. So this could be talking about the United States, Israel, Ephraim, Britain, and what is left of its empire, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, who are still dominated by Ephraimites. And then also Judah. Remember, Judah, the Jewish state in the Middle East, depends on the United States for its survival. If it wasn't for America, Judah could not exist, because we give them the arms which they need to be able to fight off the Arab neighbors. If you look further down in verse 14, it's also interesting. "I will be like a lion to Ephraim and like a young lion to the house of Judah." A lion attacks and kills very quick. I will tear them and go away. I will take them away and no one shall rescue. I will return again to my place till they acknowledge their offense. Then they will seek my face in their affliction. They will diligently seek me. In fact, go back to verse 13. There's another interesting verse here. "When Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then Ephraim went to Assyria and sent to King Jareb, yet he cannot cure you nor heal you of your wound." Now there's a duality here, because, you know, there was a problem between Israel and ancient Assyria. But, you know, this is also talking about the end time. And it's suggested here that Ephraim goes to Assyria seeking help. And also it says, "When Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound." Judah is going to suffer a wound. Now, a wound and a sickness are different. A sickness is something which is internal. A wound is something which is external. So it's something that you suffer as a result of being attacked. So perhaps we're going to see something along these lines, that Ephraim is going to have some major economic problem, that all the accumulated mistakes of decades are going to suddenly, you know, come to a head. And Ephraim's going to have an economic problem. And at the same time, Judah sees his wound. So Judah perhaps, who knows, maybe, you know, with lots of suicide bombings and everything just gets out of hand and, you know, the country can't cope. Then it says Ephraim went to Assyria to seek help. You know, if Britain has economic problems, it would probably turn to the European Union and ask for help. And the leading countries of the European Union are Germany and France. And, you know, we have believed that Germany has descended from Assyria. You know, that's something which we've got a study paper coming out on at some point, but you know, that has been the teaching of the church over the last few decades. So you know, that's a possible scenario, but certainly the implication is here that Joseph will be together at the end. You see, if we can look at the European Union map again, okay, let me show you something here. This is interesting in itself. When Britain joined Europe in 1973, the British became net contributors to Europe. In other words, the British give more money to the European Union than they receive in benefits. Most countries in the European Union, these countries for example, receive more than they give. There's only one country that gives more than Britain, and that's Germany. So the Germans and the British basically bankroll the rest of Europe. France receives a lot of benefit. French agriculture is very inefficient. And if it wasn't for the generosity of the British and the Germans, the French probably wouldn't amount to all that much. But the point is that Britain's entry into Europe, when Britain entered Europe, Ireland and Denmark joined at the same time, and then other countries joined as well. So Britain has contributed greatly to the economic development of the European Union over the past 30 years. Now it seems as if Britain is going to join the new Euro Corps, the new military force of the European Union, which is due to send troops to Afghanistan in August. So that'll be the first European force going into a conflict in August. Now, it has been said that without Britain, the Euro Corps could not be established, because Britain is the biggest military power in Europe. So it's quite possible that Britain will get this whole thing going, but then at some point, when a conflict arises between the US and Europe, Britain would go back to its ties with America. But in the meantime, having helped create a more powerful European military force, I mean, that's, quite likely a scenario. Again, this is all speculation. Okay, we're not getting into, details here about specific prophecies, but, these are all possible scenarios. Now, I wanted to spend a few minutes talking to you about keeping up on the news. You know, we're told in Matthew chapter 24 to watch, therefore, to watch what is happening. And this is said in the context of end time events. In verse 42, watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. We're told to watch for spiritual reasons. Know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not expect him. We need to be ready spiritually for the return of Jesus Christ. And when we watch what's happening in the world, it can strengthen our faith. It can give us a greater sense of urgency. But we shouldn't base our whole lives around prophecy. And I want to emphasize that. Mr. Armstrong used to say, and I endorse this absolutely, he said, you must plan your life spiritually as if Jesus Christ is going to return tomorrow. But you plan your life physically as if you're going to die at age 85. He was 93, so you might want to make it 95, okay? So, you plan your life physically as if you're just going to live to a ripe old age, just like most other people. But, this is sensible advice, even if you don't understand the Bible, because, you can get killed tomorrow, but you can live to a ripe old age, so you've got to make provision for yourself in old age. So, that's good sense, and it's a balance, okay? Spiritually, we need to be aware we could get killed at any time. I mean, I could get killed this afternoon driving home. You could walk out of here and get hit by a truck, Anything can happen to us at any time. So spiritually, we always need to be prepared for Christ's return. Because if you get killed today, in the next moment of your consciousness, it is the time of Christ's return, the first resurrection. But physically, you plan as if you're going to live to a ripe old age. So prophecy is something that's interesting to speculate about. We can certainly see, with all that we've covered in the past few weeks, we can certainly see the truth of how God raises up kings and removes kings. We can see that nations are constantly rising and nations are constantly falling. We can see that in the last 400 years, beginning with the time of Elizabeth I, you see the rise to greatness of the English-speaking people, the tribe of Joseph. And in the time of Elizabeth II, we've seen this gradual decline as we go down. We can see that goes back to Deuteronomy chapter 28, In Deuteronomy chapter 28, we looked at the blessings and the cursings. As the English people, when they received the Bible in the 1500s, as they became enthusiastic for the Word of God, and laws were changed to reflect the fact that they were committed to the laws of God, and the country became more zealous religiously, and there was this great desire to take the Bible out to the world, so you saw the rise of the tribe of Joseph, the development of the empire, and later on of the United States of America. But as we have rejected the laws of God in the 1900s, so we have been in relative decline. And so we have had more and more problems internally as countries. And the more we reject the laws of God, the worse it's going to be. And perhaps the biggest single rejection of the laws of God is taking place even now as we meet here with the tacit recognition of same-sex marriages. I noticed this morning on the news, you know, the commentary is just so stacked in favor of that. And, you know, people are so condemnatory. I think it was John Kerry this morning made some comment, or last night in some debate in Los Angeles. You know, comments were made that, you know, why would President Bush want to stop this? You know, he's stopping progress, and it should be left up to the states. And it seems as if, you know, that the push is definitely in that direction. And, you know, that's going to change perceptions of the U.S. around the world if we allow same-sex marriages. And nobody's even thinking about that. But the more we reject the laws of God, you see, the more depraved we're going to become as a people. The Bible is our rule book. And when you throw the Bible out, which our society has done, where do you draw the line? You know, after same-sex marriages, we're going to have we're going to end up with other things being allowed as well. I mean, for example, you'll get bestiality will come in at some point. And, you know, pedophilia will come in as well. It's just going to keep on going in this direction. And eventually, of course, God is going to pull the plug on us. But we reap what we sow. And, you know, these things are going to come upon us anyway because other nations are just going to turn increasingly against us. But having said that, you know, it's always possible there may be a swing back. It's possible. You know, it's possible there may be some changes. It's possible things could go on for a few more decades. You know, when I was when I first came into the church in the late 1960s, when America was losing in Vietnam, and there were problems in the Middle East, and we had some severe economic problems in England, where I was at the time, and the U.S. did as well. In fact, that's when the U.S. removed the tie with gold at that time. You know, and there were all these changes taking place, all these liberal reforms. You know, a lot of us back then thought, you know, it couldn't be far off until the end. But here we are 35 years later. And so things could still go on a while, but we just don't know. We can't set dates, and I'm glad we can't, you know. Kevin?
You said going off gold. Did you mean going off silver?
No. The U.S., until 1971, 35... U.S. dollars was the official value of 1 ounce of gold, and you could the dollar was tied to gold. But Nixon lifted that that tie at that time.
I thought it was gold
when
first, and they put on silver.
Do you know anything about Greg about silver? With silver? Britain had gone off the gold standard around 1929 or something, about 40 years earlier.
They were tied with silver for a while?
Well, from what...
I thought it was
right. Well, now our money's not tied to anything.
Right, I understand that.
You know, it's just... Sorry? Strictly confidence, yes, exactly. That's another factor, by the way, if I can just digress for a moment. That's another factor because, you know, when you look at the collapse of all these empires, I mentioned certain commonalities. You know, the first one was imperial overreach, where there's overextended militarily. A second one is major financial problems, debt, in order to pay for those conflicts. But a third one, and this is usually the final one, is a lack of confidence. When people lose confidence in their leaders or in the system, then it collapses, you see. And we're seeing a loss of confidence in our institutions. Keep in mind here, too, This is extremely important, I believe, anyway. The only two systems of government that have really worked in recent history are the British and American systems, with the British system lasting longer and the British system having been successfully exported. Some other countries also have the British system, like Canada, Australia, New Zealand. The American system has not been successfully exported. The British and American systems are based, the foundation, more than anything, is in England, the monarchy, and in the American system, the presidency. And it's interesting how those two institutions have been weakened recently, in recent years. And that could also be a factor. You know, both the presidency and the monarchy, the crown, are bigger than the person in the office. And but if the person in the office is involved in some scandal, for example, as we saw a few years ago, in both in the British monarchy and also in the American presidency, it weakens our institutions and weakens people's confidence in those institutions. And that can be a factor also, a negative factor in the future. Al and Joseph had a question. Al first. Okay, I'm not sure about the silver side, but the way that it worked with gold was you could actually exchange dollars for gold. Anybody around the world could take dollars into a bank, and in theory, at least, they could change it into gold. And but when there's more money out there than there is gold to back it, then you can't do that anymore. And I know Britain recently, for example, got rid of most of its gold under this present Labour government. And at the time, I thought, this is a big mistake. And since then, gold has gone up in value, so they lost a lot of money. Josh?
Yeah. I just want to ask you about the scripture about if Israel goes in the north and the south, is that where we're going to be marching to and fighting over Israel? That is that place?
I'm not sure what you're thinking about. Oh, I see what you mean, yeah. Okay, well, that's scripture again in Hosea, talking about the fall of Judah and the fall of Israel and Ephraim. Well, when the United States is out of the picture, Israel would cease to exist. Israel could not survive without America. So they would naturally fall together. But remember, in the last 3.5 years, Jerusalem will be trodden down by the Gentiles. So even before that, the U.S. may not be able to defend Israel anymore. So Israel then becomes more of a European problem rather than an American problem. So that would also suggest America militarily is weakened even before that last 3.5 years. So again, we come back to the fact that the American empire undoubtedly will come to an end before the United States of America comes to an end. There's a difference there. I've got a few questions here. Greg. It would be disastrous, I think, if they start to price oil in euros. We are already overspending as a country. So every month, we buy from other countries approximately $45 billion more than we sell. So we're going into debt internationally. I'm not talking about the federal budget deficit. That's a separate issue. We're going into debt internationally in trade to the extent of about $45 billion a month. If oil is suddenly priced in euros, and it is in the interests of the Arab nations to do that, because as the dollar goes down and oil is priced in dollars, they're losing money. So it is in their interest to switch to euros. And at least three oil ministers recently have suggested this. If it happens, then we would have to pay more for our oil. But it could get even worse. If you look at Ghana, for example, Ghana buys oil from Nigeria. Ghana cannot buy that oil with Ghanaian money because nobody wants Ghanaian money. So they have to get dollars or euros or pounds to be able to buy the oil. So that means Ghana has to sell to countries like England and Germany and France and the US. Ghana has to sell some of its products just to get the money from them to be able to buy the oil from Nigeria. Now, if they decide to price oil in euros, initially they might take dollars at the exchange rate. So that if oil, if for example, is like 30 euros a barrel, and $40 equals 30 euros, they might accept $40 for every barrel of oil, because $40 can be exchanged into 30 euros. But if the dollar becomes a soft currency, like the Ghanaian cedi or the Nigerian naira, a soft currency cannot be used outside of your own country because it is valueless internationally. And if the dollar ever came to that point, and it has done in the past, it did in the Civil War, for example, if it ever comes to that point, that means we would then have to sell items to Europe first to get the euros to buy the oil. That would literally finish us off. That would be my conclusion. It would just finish us off. Daniel.
How does the pound work in all of this? I mean, why is it that the pound, I mean, England hasn't changed to the euro in the world system? How does the pound work?
There's a complication with the pound because London is the world's biggest financial center. That's the complication. There is so much trade in London of currencies and investments and things that if Britain went into the euro, it would effectively lose control of that, and it's quite possible that a lot of the City of London's financial activities would then automatically move to Frankfurt. That's the fear. Then another factor is that the British follow economic policies similar to the US. Whereas the Europeans have much more centralization, much more control by the government. And, if Britain entered the euro, for example, the eurozone, as it's called, it's likely that Britain would end up with higher unemployment because right now Britain has the freedom to be able to determine its own interest rates, for example, which have led to a boom in Britain. Britain's a booming economy and, has a very low unemployment rate. Whereas many European countries have a high unemployment rate. Those two reasons are the primary reasons. There are five tests that this present British government has applied to this whole question of the euro. And the man is called, the Treasury Minister, the Finance Minister is called the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Gordon Brown. And every 2 or 3 years, he tells Parliament, what the situation is relative to these five tests. And if these five questions ever all come together, in other words, if the conditions are right to enter the euro, then the commitment is there to enter the euro. But all those five conditions would have to be met. I'm not sure what those five conditions are, but they would have to be met. But I think many people in Britain are rather afraid of joining the euro because of the loss of independence. It would be the biggest single step in the loss of independence. But again, you've got the country divided roughly a third, a third, a third, which is what usually happens. And who's going to win, see? The Conservatives now, who might be the next government, seem to be becoming more pro-European. So who knows? Yeah, Lindsay. Well, yes, America has had a policy since World War II, a very sensible policy. The policy was determined by World War II. when, if you remember, we were fighting on two fronts, against the Japanese in the Far East and against the Nazis, the Third Reich in Europe. The policy has been that America must be able to fight two major conflicts in two different parts of the world at exactly the same time and win both. That policy was quietly dropped during the Clinton administration. And the Clinton administration reduced the size of the military by about 40%. This is one reason why the economy did so well at that time. There were other factors too, like the internet revolution, for example. But the end of the Cold War enabled Western countries to reduce the sizes of their military, because no longer was communism a threat. However, if they had read Henry Kissinger's book Diplomacy, which came out roughly 10 years ago, he showed how the end of the Cold War would make the world more complicated and lead to greater conflict, not less conflict. But one of the sad things is that most of our leaders don't read all that much, and they don't know much history, and that's true on both sides of the Atlantic, and their advisors don't seem to read all that much either. Josh. Well, that shows he's learning lessons from history, because that was the policy of the British with their navy. That if anybody built a navy that came to half the size of the British navy, they went in and sank it before it could get any bigger. And they maintained their naval supremacy for almost 400 years doing that. And that's the best way to do it. You go in first and, you know, get rid of the threat. I mean, in the last 3 minutes, let me just quickly cover one subject, okay, which I was going to take 45 minutes on, but anyway. So I'll talk really, really fast, okay? But it is on watching and keeping up on the news, because often this question comes up, what's the best way to do that? And if you can just remember three words, vary your sources. And I'm not talking about cooking, okay? Vary your sources, S-O-U-R-C-E-S. Because you cannot really rely on any one single source for news. Most of our news is really entertainment. Whether it be CNN or Fox or the major networks, they tend to mix the two together. So you get news of Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson and Martha Stewart and you know, Lacey Peterson, Scott Peterson, etc. It's all kind of put in there with the really important items of news. I'm not saying those things are not important in their own way, but you know, also the networks will choose a specific item to lead on in the news, which gives the impression to people that that's the most important news item of the day, and it often isn't. It just reflects their own bias. So an item which supports their usually liberal agenda, for example, might be highlighted. And we all get the impression that this is the most important thing of all, and you know, that way you know, everybody is unduly influenced. If you want straight world news, and world news is important, I mean, it's important to know what's happening in your own country, it is, and we do need to know what's happening. But when it comes to world news, our networks tend to neglect that a great deal, and that goes for CNN and Fox as well. A lot of people in the church have started watching Fox because it's more conservative, but Fox has its limitations. I remember last year, for example, when France was giving us problems at the United Nations over the invasion of Iraq. Somebody was being interviewed on Fox who was an expert on this, and he was asked the question, why do the French not support the US? And he started explaining that in 1954 in Vietnam, we failed to support the French. And then in 1956 in Suez, we turned against the French. And the French have never forgiven us for that. And he got cut off right in the middle of this by the Fox interviewer, who said, well, that's ancient history. We're talking about now. So you see, anybody watching it would not have had the opportunity to really understand why the French were taking the position that they were taking. So, you know, every network has got its failings, its limitations. When it comes to world news, I prefer the BBC World Service for the world news. And also News World International, which comes out of Canada and is available on DirecTV, satellite TV. I get it, it's only $35 a month, which is cheaper than cable, and you get like 300 channels or something, 298 of which are not worth looking at all. But anyway, News World International is 24 hours a day of world news. News World International also has Deutsche Welle's daily news program. It also has a British news program every day. It also has a Japanese one. So you get good coverage from different parts of the world. No, the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation. BBC tends to be anti-American and anti-British. But I think it's the British Broadcasting, it's anti-British as well. In fact, Tony Blair's government and the BBC recently clashed big time. But, you know, the BBC tends to be run nowadays by people from third world countries. Most of their reporters are third world citizens, even the ones who present the news. But it's good for us to know how the rest of the world sees us. And certainly if you watch the BBC, you'll get a good idea of how the rest of the world sees us. News World International is far more balanced. It doesn't have that anti-Americanism, at least as far as I can see. I've only been able to get it for 3 weeks. But I've not detected any great bias in it. And it certainly has very good international news coverage. When it comes to magazines and newspapers, almost all of them are liberal. A very good publication that began recently is the American Conservative, which is very critical of the Bush administration because it's not conservative. I'll leave you to look into that yourself. But the American Conservative is a good publication and usually has at least one article that really makes me think. Let me think what other publications are there. But Newsweek, Time, U.S. News and World Report, all they do basically is rehash the news from the previous week. The Economist is a good publication for world news, but it's expensive and there's a lot in it. I try to get my news off the radio. I've got satellite radio, costs less than $10 a month, and you know, that gives you 100 stations, including the BBC, 24 hours a day. It gives you Fox as well, and CNN, and ABC, and other channels. So, that's it. But vary your sources. Just remember that. Don't rely on one source. Whenever anybody says to me, oh, I only watch Fox, or I only watch CNN, it bothers me a little bit, because they're getting a distorted image of everything. Tyler?
The American Conservative, is that a magazine?
It's a magazine. It comes out once every 2 weeks. I don't agree with everything in it. I don't agree with everything on any of those things I mentioned, okay? You know, but it does help you think a bit, and it is a good publication. It's $19.95, I think, it works out about just over a dollar an issue, something like that, okay? All right, well, I've enjoyed being here the last 3 weeks, but my wife wants me home.